The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the pod that follows the money behind the beautiful game. I'm Kevin Day, and breaking off from his socially distanced, no more than six accountants, garden barbecue, is football finance expert at Liverpool University, Kieran Maguire. Hello, Kieran, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you very much, Kevin.
Yes, what's been your media commitments this week? I know we're recording at a strange time because we have to work around you and your various escapades. What's happening?
I'm doing somebody in Russia. No, I shouldn't say that, actually. I'm doing a university in Russia tomorrow. Oh. I did New York on Monday, and I'm doing something called 5-year plan, which I think is more Croydon based.
It is more Croydon based. Yes, I didn't. When are you doing that tomorrow?
I need to check, but they've asked me to talk about the Palace accounts.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah, we've got Geoff Thomas coming on as well, so that'd be nice. You can meet
cool.
Palace Hero remotely. So you were in New York just before the riot started, so if anything happens in Russia, we'll know there's a factor going on there. Well done. I'll look out on TV for thousands of women in Barcelona shirts in the streets of Moscow rioting. anyway, so it's Thursday today, so it's a news pod, as we say. And coming up, we have a chat with Brian Caldwell, who's chief executive of Shrewsbury Town. I say we. Brian wanted to talk to the organ grinder, not the monkey, as they all do. But before that, Kieran, we have several stories from outside the Premier League, quite big stories. The biggest being that the Championship is coming back on the 20th of June, but some clubs are not happy, I think it's safe to say. QPR are, and I quote, appalled. Are they appalled for financial reasons or for health and safety reasons?
I think there's a combination of football and non-financial or non-football related issues here. The QPR chief executive, Lee Hughes, said that they were given 40 minutes notice of coming back on the date. And he said that this is driven by the fact that the EFL are desperate to get the season finished and the playoffs by the 31st of July. His view is that there's not enough time for full contact training before that takes place. It's ignoring the clubs, but also it's ignoring the doctors. You know, the doctors at individual clubs, they've not been consulted in this. So he's not happy. Gary Sweet, who was a guest on our show previously, he seems to think that it's coming back too quickly. And also Barnsley are continuing to be very vehement in their protests. And they're saying that if football does come back and clubs are relegated, then they should be given parachute payments of £7 million each to compensate them for the lack of money they'll be getting from TV next season.
Do the Championship have the same prize money system as the Premier League? So the higher up you finish at the end, the more money you get?
No, not to the same extent. There's effectively around about £7 million per club, which is split evenly. If you are chosen by Sky for a match, you get between 80 and £120,000, depending on whether it's a Tuesday night match, a Friday night match, a Saturday lunchtime match. So the home clubs get a bit of money, but that's peanuts compared to the Premier League. And if you're the away team that are chosen, you get 10 grand. And that's why we see the likes of Leeds United being very angry about the the way that the EFL TV deal works, because Leeds, as we know, are sort of box office as far as the Championship are concerned, and they say they're not being rewarded appropriately for it.
And presumably there are no plans to show every game or someone free to air, as in the Premier League.
I don't think there'll be anything on a free-to-air basis. That's certainly not been discussed as yet. Sky do have a contract to show quite a few fixtures. I suspect that the EFL might offer them a few more in order to minimise any rebate that Sky might be claiming. But in the EFL, they do have something called iFollow, which is effectively a subscription service. And if season ticket holders aren't taking the rebates which are offered to them, this could be one way of ensuring that they get to see every match. Clearly, if the club does have season ticket fans, then they will have their communication details, their email address, and they could perhaps send them a link to the iFollow service for free. And also it'd be a way of showcasing the nature of the beast in terms of how these matches are broadcast. But it's one camera and one commentator, no pundits. You know, it's very much a pared down service that you get with iFollow at present.
Yes, like the old days when you used to be able to get a video of every Palace away game when the club press secretary did a quite shonky commentary over one shaky camera, which I think he was holding as well. But I was looking at the league table in the Championship. There are probably eight or nine clubs who've got no chance of getting in the playoffs and aren't going to get relegated. So it seems to me that the unhappy clubs are coming from that group. You can understand why, with nothing riding on it, they would be reluctant to come back and play football.
That's right. I mean, QPR, they're 12th in the table. They're going to have to take staff out of furlough. There's also going to be the costs of putting on matches, the costs of going to away matches, so that there's no financial benefit for a club such as QPR. And one of the things that has been discussed at the EFL is having 20-man squads. Now, if you've got 20-man squads, then you've got to go and be paying bonuses for being chosen in the squad. So that's going to increase costs. There's talk of allowing 5 substitutes. And most contracts have, if you're a substitute who comes on, you get extra money. So there will be even higher costs incurred than would have been the case had COVID-19 not arisen. And at the same time, you've got less income. So you can see that as far as these clubs are concerned, that they're genuinely concerned about their financial futures.
Yeah, it's interesting, the substitute thing as well, because watching the Bundesliga, it's quite clear that the teams are taking full advantage of the 5-sub rule there. They're all using the 5 substitutes. So in effect, in the end of the game, you've got 10 new players on. But they're saying it's a good way of blooding youngsters. But as you say, if you've got appearance money to throw in on top of that, it's going to actually cost clubs like QPR to play. And also clubs like Charlton will be in a difficult situation trying to get 20 players on the bench, because 3 Charlton players are absolutely refusing to play come what may.
That's right. I mean, it's Lyle Taylor, David Davis and Chris Solly, who are the players involved. Lee Boyer, I think he spoke on TalkSport a couple of days ago about this. And it was quite revealing. Lee wasn't being critical of the players. He said in the case of Lyle Taylor, he's out of contract at the end of June. He's had a fantastic season. He was a huge reason why Charlton got promoted last year. He's a huge reason why they've still got a chance of avoiding relegation this season. So he's in demand. So why sacrifice what could be a life-changing deal for a player who's 30? So realistically, he's got one good contract left to potentially play for Charlton, risk getting an injury. And this is what the player is concerned about under those circumstances. One of the other players, a guy called David Davis, he's on loan from Birmingham and he's sort of had enough. He wants to go back to his host club. Again, the loan deal expires on the 30th of June. And as far as Charlton are concerned, potentially they've got 15 players they could lose on the 30th of June if they don't take up the 1 month offer, which is being given by EFL clubs, by all accounts.
Yeah, Lee Boyer strikes me as old school. I imagine if he got COVID, he'd run it off, wouldn't he? But so these Charlton players, it's for sort of career reasons rather than security and safety reasons they're making this decision?
Well, yes. I mean, and, you know, it's perfectly understandable. You know, whilst people, I think, become preoccupied with footballers and wages, you know, Lyle Taylor, as I say, he's probably got one good contract left. If he can get a 3 or a 4 year deal from another championship club. Charlton have just come up from League One, remember, and Lyle Taylor was, he originally came from AFC Wimbledon, so therefore he wouldn't have been on big money there. He would have been on a League One contract at Charlton, which presumably had a promotion bonus linked to it. But Charlton won't be paying certainly the average wages in the Championship. So he's made a decision, and he says, "Well, I do want to play, but at the back of my mind, every time I go in for a tackle, I'm risking not getting a decent contract from clearly a host of clubs who are interested in signing him for next season and beyond."
Yeah, I'm going to pause here briefly, Kieran, to make a quick apology to you and the listeners. If you can hear a strange buzzing sound in the background, it's rather odd. My little workroom come office has a fridge in it, obviously a beer fridge, but it packed up about a year ago. But for some reason, it's decided to start working again. It's completely out of the blue. It's just decided to switch itself on. I was at a funeral yesterday, so now I'm worried it was my uncle trying to get in touch with me by turning the beer fridge on that wasn't working. But I thought I'd better explain. Also, it's slightly less sinister than the buzzing sounds we can hear in the background at your house occasionally, Kieran. But let's move north of the border. It's been nothing but bad news when we've spoken about Scottish football recently, unfortunately, from Gordon Strachan's comments to virtual civil war earlier in the season about whether the season should finish. But some better news this week for Scottish football with some talk about new investment.
I mean, this has been semi-organised by Anne Budge, who is sort of the chief executive at Hearts. And she's managed to find a philanthropist who's willing to put money into the game and potentially help those clubs, especially in the lower leagues of Scottish football, survive until we have some form of proper resumption. So this guy is called James Anderson. He's been a big supporter of the arts in Edinburgh. So you're a big fan of Edinburgh. You know, the Baroness, yeah. That's where she comes from, actually. So we love the city as well. And Hearts as a football club, they have relied on donations. They got £3.25 million in 2019 from various people gifting them money to cope to help towards wages and expansion of the ground and things of that nature. So it does appear very positive. Our friend Neil Doncaster, I believe that he has had conversations with James Anderson. I think he's hoping to get some sort of deal finalized. The cynics are saying, well, hold on. If this is coming from Hearts, and Hearts are presently in a relegation place in the Scottish Premiership, does this come with conditions? But it appears to date that this guy, James Anderson, it just wants Scottish football to survive. So it is unconditional. It's certainly the noises that are coming out so far. And if it does go through, well, first of all, you've got to say hats off to him for, you know, for being such a generous guy. And you know, that's the nature of philanthropy. You know, there are good people doing good things. And it would be wonderful for those, if it increased the chances of those 42 clubs being in existence, you know, this time, if we have this conversation next year.
Absolutely. No, Kieran, we know that Guy, our producer, half-heartedly listens to this while he's doing his day job, but I'm just going to get his attention. Guy, Anne Budge, I think we should get her on the show, because very often when you talk about Scottish football, Kieran, and you talk about initiatives and good things, they seem to come from Anne Budge at heart. So she strikes me as a very interesting person, somebody we'd like to talk to, because we're very aware that we've spoken to Neil Doncaster, but it'd be nice to get a club's view of what's happening in Scottish football, because, you know, we don't hear enough down here about the problems they're having as well, because they're, you know, if we're having problems, they're multiplied up there by 10 or 20, aren't they, really?
Absolutely. I mean, she's not a woman who's in my little black book, so that's actually quite a rarity.
Well, she's one of few, really.
But so yeah, I think
the bees are blank in your little black book, are they?
Well, not quite.
Yeah, how many Russian surnames start with B? Yeah, no, if we can get Anne on the show, if someone can pass a message to her, I'd be fascinated to talk to her, because she's somebody who clearly likes to think positively and likes to look for solutions rather than just wait for somebody to help her out. So, good news for Colchester fans as well. They've got the chance for a virtual day out in the playoffs.
Yes, and I think this is an initiative that they've seen happen in the Bundesliga, whereby if you pay £25, you can send a photograph of yourself to the club, and what they're going to do, they're going to make you virtual fans. So they're going to stick your photograph on the terraces. This has worked in Germany, and I think it's gone down pretty well. There have been a few abuses of the system in Germany. By all accounts, Harold Shipman has put in an appearance at a couple of matches as far as the photographs are concerned, which perhaps is a little bit naughty, but it does show a sort of a typical gallows humour that we see in football clubs. But we've also seen that Cheltenham have followed suit. They're in the playoffs, and what's going to happen is, I think this is a really cute system. They've even offered it to away fans for the playoff game. I think they're going to play Northampton, that the away fans can pay £25 and they can have their photograph in the away end as well. It's raised 18 and a half grand at Cheltenham so far. So clearly the fans like the idea of at least their faces, if not their bodies, being at match for these playoffs.
Yeah. Now, which of us got the team wrong? Because I said Colchester and you said Cheltenham.
Oh, no, Colchester and Cheltenham. Colchester started it, and Cheltenham have subsequently followed suit.
See, it didn't occur to me. That's how quick-witted I am. It didn't even occur to me for a second we could be talking about two clubs here. I just assumed one of the middle-aged idiots working on this show had made a mistake. Oh, the buzzing stopped. That's good. I hope that means my uncle is rested in heaven. I didn't expect to use that sentence today either. Yeah, it's a good idea. Like you say, though, I'd be too tempted just to send a picture of Yogi Bear with my face on it and a Yogi Bear in a palace scarf. But it is, as we learned last week, it's probably safer than getting inflatable sex toys like they did in Korea. Now, we're talking to the chairman of Shrewsbury later on, but the chairman of Wickham isn't particularly happy. He's told 15 members of the non-playing staff at Wickham Wanderers that they need to look for alternative employment when the furlough ends on the 31st of October, and they've cancelled all loan deals.
Yes, so this guy is Rob Kuhig. He only bought the club in February, and I did have a chat with people who are at the Wickham Trust. Why are you selling out to a private individual? He's a solicitor, he's an American, and so on. And they said, this is something, again, a show perhaps we ought to have in depth at some point in terms of fan ownership. We couldn't physically support the club financially anymore. It was in danger of going bust. So Rob came in February, and his fear that if they do return to playing, Wickham are presently losing £350,000 a month. He's looking at a potential COVID-19 cost of £2.5 million. So he's had to get rid of 15 non-playing staff who are on furlough, or rather say to them, at present, the club pays the remaining 20%. So up to the end of May, the government under the grant scheme pays 80% of salary, and the club pays the 20% top up. From the 1st of June onwards, the club doesn't have the money to pay the top up. And realistically, he can't guarantee them a job when furloughing ends. So he's said, look, I'm going to have to suggest that you carry on by trying to find yourself alternative employment, because the numbers don't stack up. And if it's happening at Wickham, it's got to be happening at a lot of other clubs as well. And I think, we have hinted at some of our concerns beforehand. And it's a genuine worry for lower league football that how is it going to continue when it's so reliant upon turnstile-based income in the future if there's no guarantee as to when matches are going to return before a paying audience?
You're absolutely right about fans' trust, supporters' trust. I think we probably do need to have a special pod on this subject, because it strikes me that quite often when we talk about them, they are just a holding solution. The fans take over the club and wait for somebody who can properly afford it to run the club, rather than actually being able to take the clubs forward and develop it. So I think that's something we should probably look at and compare and contrast a few of the supporters' trusts out there, because there are quite a few in the lower leagues, aren't there now?
There are. I mean, Exeter have one, and they've They've done pretty well. In Scotland, it seems to be more successful. If you take a look at the likes of Motherwell, and I think Partick are effectively going to go that way, thanks to the legacy of the fan who'd won the lottery and then subsequently sadly passed away. But Motherwell seems to have got it really well organised. But it is a challenge. If you talk to anybody that's involved in the likes of Pompey and Wickham and so on, that they will tell you that it's a lot of hours for little reward. You know, and they're not looking for financial reward. It's a bit like us on this podcast. You know, you're doing it for love, not money.
Yeah, it'd be nice to do it for both, though, wouldn't it? I'm happy to do things for love. And as we know with you in Moscow, Kieran, you can do things for money as well. Now, I know, you know that my notes on this occur. I like to be surprised. So that's my excuse for not doing too much research. But I've got two things written down here now. And I generally don't know whether I wrote these this morning, because there are two things here that have probably been on a third of the notes that I've written for this pod since we've been doing it in October. First of all, Macclesfield Town have been issued with more misconduct charges by the EFL.
Yes, and this could be a game changer in terms of who gets relegated from League Two. Macclesfield,
if anybody, yeah.
Yes, well, that's true. Macclesfield didn't pay their wages in March, so therefore the EFL have charged them with financial misconduct. March was the sixth time this season that they failed to pay wages. By all accounts, they have just paid the May wages, so that they're now up to date. So if this charge goes ahead, Macclesfield are presently 3 points ahead of Stevenage, but they do have a better goal difference. So depending upon how the sitting of the panel operates, and the extent of the penalty, if it's more than 3 points, then they drop into the relegation zone. And the cynic in me says, well, that gets rid of a problem for the EFL and creates a problem for the National League. Because Macclesfield's record in terms of tardiness when it comes to wage paying has been absolutely disgraceful over the course of the last couple of years. And the EFL, they've given them 2 points deductions. The matches have been cancelled because players have refused to pay. Clearly, you know, they're a logistical nightmare to deal with. They're an administrative nightmare to deal with. But still, we are talking about a football club which has fans, which employs people and so on. So it could be that Macclesfield will be relegated on the basis of three lawyers, which doesn't fit easily with me as a football fan.
I'm struggling to find words that won't get bleeped out, to be perfectly honest. The EFL would be helped out of a Stevenage-shaped hole as well, because they're making loud noises about potential legal action if they go down without actually playing any football. The thing with Macclesfield, and same as other clubs, and I don't know how you get around this, but it's the club owner that should be sanctioned. Surely they can find a way that doesn't punish the club and the fans for the misdemeanours of this man who, since he first came, I mean, he's barely been set foot in the town, let alone the club, and has run the club into the ground. And yet, it doesn't matter that there's only 3,000 regular Macclesfield fans. To them, it's everything, and it's just they shouldn't be punished for one. I'm sure you agree with me, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And the second sentence, which I've been saying every second pod since we started, strange goings on at Bolton Wanderers.
Over the course of the last couple of days, there's been a couple of mortgages appearing for a company called FVWL Limited, which stands for Football Ventures Whites Limited, who are Bolton's new owners.
Right.
So they bought Bolton Wanderers from the administrators last year. And then these documents appeared. Now, I managed to have a quick conversation with a guy called Mark Isles. Mark is the Bolton Wanderers local newspaper, the Bolton News. Yeah. He's their main guy when it comes to reporting on the club. And as you know, I've had dealings with Mark. We both used to appear with alarming regularity in the chairman's notes. Because anything that was critical of the club, he used to go and start by giving a load of snide comments about the pair of us. or anybody else that was critical. So that was Ken Anderson, who is in high on my list of football owner scumbags. I think he's only just behind Steve Dale, and that's saying something. So the administrators came in, they ran Bolton, and the new owners, Football Ventures, took over. But by all accounts, they've not paid the full sums due to the administrators. And so therefore, the administrators have effectively said, well, we're not entirely happy. We're not entirely comfortable where things lie. So we're going to take out a mortgage on the outstanding debts which are due to us. The club has come out with a statement this morning to say, well, this is just paperwork which has been delayed. It's all in the normal course of business. So that could very well be the case. The club are saying that all payments are up to date. And again, Mark confirmed that. But clearly the administrators are taking the view that if things don't go right, we need some form of recourse. And then 24 hours later, a company called Fildraw, which is also owed money by Bolton Wanderers. Now, Fildraw was a trust which was related to the former owner of Bolton Wanderers, Eddie Davis. Fildraw, I think, is based in Bermuda, but it was owed, you know, we're talking millions of pounds by the club. It too has taken out a mortgage, effectively saying that if payments are not made in time, this will give us the right to take over some of the assets, potentially including the property of the club. So it's not great news. It's not necessarily bad news either. It could simply just be as the club are claiming, it's paperwork. But Bolton Wanderers fans have been through too many heartaches and too many sort of, you know, five to midnight moments over the course of the last couple of years to be welcoming this with open arms.
Yes, I've known you long enough to realise that when you say it could very well be the case, you mean exactly the opposite of could very well be the case. I do wish, we've had this conversation before, I do wish companies that set themselves up to buy clubs wouldn't give themselves these such sub-James Bond front names, like Football Ventures. We had a few weeks ago, it's just, call themselves something, you immediately get suspicious when you find out, A, they've been set up to buy the club, and B, they've got a stupid name. Anyway, but neither of us in a very good mood today, are we? I've got a post-funeral hangover. You haven't. What's your excuse?
Well, football club owners being arseholes.
Oh, fair enough. And scumbags. Yeah.
And scumbags, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, the reason this pod exists, so we shouldn't get too humpty with them. Now, the final question is the final subject before we get onto the interview with the Shrewsbury Town chief exec. We've spoken a lot about season ticket refunds and people choosing to give them back to the club or academy or foundation or whatever. Darlington fans have been doing a bit more than that. Darlington fans have been putting their hands in their pockets. This is a good story, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a really good news story. And I remember going to Darlington for my 35th birthday. Not with the Baroness, no. Not many people can claim that, but we lost 2-0 that day, so it wasn't a good trip. Darlington is an old school club. It has dropped out of the Football League, as we've known for a few years, and like many other clubs, it's living on a week-to-week basis. But what they've done is they've set up something called the Boost the Budget campaign they set that up during May, and they've raised £131,000, which is an amazing achievement. And I think this does show just how much football clubs mean to individual fans. And I went on to the crowdfunding page that was set up, and some people have just been sending in a pound, or they're going to commit themselves to £1 a month. But it's not the amount, it's the fact that they've done it and they want to feel part of Darlington and Darlington's part of them is really good. But what I did like is the club are going to give a series of different rewards, some are going to be drawn out of effectively out of a hat each month. So there are going to be fan experiences. You can be a co-commentator for the fans-based radio show during the match. Which, if I was that, I think there'd be an awful lot of bleeping taking place. you can design a concept kit which will go for a vote before fans.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
So I'd love that. You can travel on the coach to an away game. I think they've done that for three or four seasons. Or the one which appeals to me most of all, you can pick the pre-match playlist.
Nice.
That would be 1979 heaven for me, wouldn't it?
It'll be the only game where people don't turn up till a minute past three. It's like, no, let's not take that risk. When you got so excited there, I thought one of the prizes on offer was to run a sex shop for a weekend. Darlington, it's strange because they've got that amazing stadium as well, which still makes you do a double take every time you see it. Because it's, I mean, was it the old stadium when you went up there?
It was Feetham's that I went to. So yes, it's another one of those grounds that I would like. Was it George Reynolds, the safe breaker?
The convicted safe breaker, yeah.
That's right. So it's another one to tick off on my list in due course.
Yeah, he was a proper old school wrong and owner. I kind of miss the days of people like him who just happily admitted that he was a convicted safe breaker and wanted to buy a football club, presumably with some of the proceeds of the safes that he'd broken into. At least he hid in plain sight as a wrong, didn't he? Now, Kieran, we are fast becoming the place for club chairs and CEOs. I don't know why I wrote club. I wrote club chairs in a bid to not be sexist, but they're virtually all men, so I should have just said club chairman. Club chairs and CEOs to air their concerns. And just a few minutes ago, it wasn't a few minutes ago, it was 35 minutes ago, because Kieran can double task, but he can't double task that well that he can interview somebody while I'm interviewing him. Kieran spoke to the chief executive of Shrewsbury Town, Brian Caldwell, and Brian had some quite strong opinions.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks very much for joining us, Brian. How are you and how's everybody at Shrewsbury?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me on today, Kieran. Not everybody's well. Just trying to navigate our way through the issues that we're all facing as football clubs just now and kind of getting used to working from home, if I'm honest, as well, which is, I don't mind it because I can still operate as normal, but it's difficult times and challenging times for all football clubs and not just football clubs, but all businesses, I think, just now getting through this COVID situation we're in.
Absolutely. And has anybody at the club, contracted COVID, or have you been free of this horrible disease to date?
We have had one member of staff that tested positive for it at one point, and we've had a few of the players as well who have shown symptoms, but and obviously at the early stages, because on a weekly basis, all the clubs are having to, it was bi-weekly at first, and now it's just weekly, we have to report to the EFL of any players with symptoms and any players that are self-isolating and how many players are available as well. So we've been keeping track on all the players, but I mean, unfortunately just now we've got nobody with any symptoms or anybody carrying anything. So hopefully it's a clean bill of health as far as I'm aware just now.
That's great. And in terms of training, are the players training by themselves at home, or have they started to come back in any way, shape, or form?
No, they're all training from home just now. It's almost like a closed season. I think the players are treating it that way, trying to stay fit over this period when there's been no games, which is obviously increasingly difficult for them because a lot of them are keen to get back and train as quickly as possible. But we furloughed all our players and most of the football staff as well. In fact, a lot of the club staff too, just to get some of the grant back, which kind of helps us get through this difficult period. So the players are all just doing their own thing just now, just training from home or whatever. And obviously the weather's been good too. A lot of them are going out cycling and doing long runs, etc., just to try and tick over until, well, when we know what's going to happen with this 2019-2020 season, and then obviously the start of 2020-2021 season after that.
That's understandable, right? And so, is it right that there's a vote now taking place on the 8th of June? And certainly from an outsider's perspective, reading sort of what's happening in the media, there's not a universal opinion as to how things are going to go forwards. So what's Shrewsbury's position? I mean, you're 16th in the table. Realistically, yeah, the playoffs seem unlikely. Relegation's unlikely as well. What's your viewpoint as how the season should finish?
I mean, I've been quite clear on this, and we put an open letter to all our supporters a couple of weeks ago just to try and explain everything and just show some transparency. We feel first and foremost that bringing players and staff back from a health point of view isn't necessarily correct at this time. I don't feel comfortable, and we don't feel comfortable as employers. We have duty of care as an employer to look after our staff. People say to me, oh, but it's just football players, they're all fit. You know, it's very unlikely for them to contract the virus. But I think we also have to be aware that, you know, there might be a backroom staff there who might have underlying health issues. We might have, you know, older people working. I mean, our assistant manager, for example, is 65, Graham Barrow. You know, bringing them back into an environment where there's an element of risk, it doesn't sit comfortably with me. And then if we did have to play the games, we would obviously need some kind of stewarding operation to ensure that it was a sterile area and no supporters were getting in, etc. So we would then need an element of stewards there, and you know, obviously I'd then need to take people back, bring people, staff back as well. And you just don't know who's got underlying health issues. And so I've not been comfortable at all with the health side of it, first and foremost, which I think sometimes in life, health comes before anything else. That's been the most important thing for me. Secondly, it would be financial suicide for us to start restarting the season. And I know it's probably easy for me to say because we're in that kind of mid-table area whereby, you know, there's not a lot to play for over the last 10 games. Hopefully we were safe where we were, etc. But you know, when you take the cost of, if we had to bring players back to play these remaining 10 games, then there's the loss of the furlough money. And I know it's been disputed by certain people about how much it's actually going to cost. But like, when you actually work out the furlough money for players coming back to train for 4 or 5 weeks and then play the games for 4 or 5 weeks, you know, from our point of view, I worked out it was roughly about £230,000 straight away. On top of that, you've got the testing cost of £140,000, taking you to £370,000. And then you've got like some match costs, etc., which when you start and add that up, you know, we've still got Sunderland away to play. We've also got Southend away as two examples of, you know, looking at that, we would probably need to take three coaches to transport all the players and staff so that we're still social distancing, which has obviously got a cost. You know, they would need single rooms and hotels. So you start and add that up, and you know, I've put it out openly that you're probably looking at a £500,000 loss with little or no income coming in to cover those costs. So for clubs at League One and League Two level, I can totally understand why, you know, we're all, most of us, if you like, are, as I see it, are feeling that, what, you know, why should we suddenly spend £500,000 at a time when we've not got any income coming in, to spend that kind of sums of money, which a lot of clubs don't have at this time.
And that seems a very logical thing to say, because I was looking at the comments from the Wickham owner. You know, they've got players out of contract, they've got players on loan. Clearly, Lee Boyer has also been talking to TalkSport with regards to some of his players being reluctant to play beyond the 30th of June. Is that something which has been potentially discussed with players? And also, is it logistically fit possible to restart the season, finish off 10 games, and then to have clubs playing three playoff games in by, presumably, the very latest at the 31st of July? And that's it. That's assuming that you're going to get players on board in terms of extending contracts.
Taking the contract situation, I mean, we can now extend a player's contract for the month. As it stands just now, if a player's out of contract on the 30th of June, then the club is duty bound to pay them the full month's salary, which is regarded as a severance month, whereby if they haven't found another club with the same amount of getting paid the same amount of money over July, then all clubs are duty bound to pay the full salary over July. So, you know, there's a new document came out whereby players could sign up for another month, just purely to cover them from a registration point of view if we had to play during July. But, you know, I've got to think, I mean, I've had a player from another club actually contact me in the last 24 hours asking my advice on it, somebody I've known from previous. And he's asking, you know, why should we sign this? You know, we're really concerned about playing again, you know, if we had to, or being registered again, because, you know, we're out of contract in June and the club are only potentially looking to sign us for 1 month. You know, what happens if we break down in training, get injured in training, get injured playing games in that month? With only a month's contract basically on offer, you know, what's the outlook for them going forward? You know, they're losing the opportunity to go and work and get employment elsewhere if the club didn't want them beyond July. So I think it's going to be very difficult to persuade players. And I can actually totally sympathise with the players, because if I was in their shoes, I'd probably be looking at it like that as well. You know, why would I risk injury to play out the month of July beyond the end of my contract with no safeguard there for me potentially having income from August onwards? And I think there's a lot of risk in that. And I can see it's not something we've spoken to our players about, because I've always been of a mind that, well, one, I'm not comfortable with it, but two, I'm kind of hopeful that common sense will prevail and the season will be curtailed next week at some point. There'll be obviously a vote on Monday for the change in the regulations, and then we're expecting a vote quickly after that to decide whether, you know, we curtail the league, especially in League One, which seems to be, I would say, mixed, but it's probably, from what I'm understanding, most clubs are keen to curtail the league season.
Okay, and how do you feel? I mean, have you seen the comments from Mark Palios? You know, they're going to be relegated by 0.14 of a point. Do you think there should be promotion and relegation on the basis of points per game, or is that a separate issue?
It's a very difficult one, and what we have to always remember, we're in unprecedented waters here. You know, it's unprecedented circumstances we're in. You know, how do we deal with that? I mean, I spoke to Mark at the weekend about his proposal, and I understand, you know, if anybody we should be sympathetic towards in the current, you know, curtailment process, it's Tranmere Rovers, because Tranmere are 3 points behind. We're on a really good run before the COVID hit. And I think all clubs have got a lot of sympathy for Tranmere. The difficulty then is just trying to get something that fits within the rules, that actually suits a lot of clubs. And at the end of the day, everybody's going to vote for self-interest. I get that. You know, we all make decisions based on what's best for our football club, which we all should do. But I think everybody has sympathy for Mark, but I think it's very difficult to come up with something whereby, you know, it's going to suit everybody. My initial feeling was that perhaps we should promote teams, don't have any playoffs and don't have any relegation. But obviously the issue with that is that the potential for the Premiership could then say, well, if you're not having relegation in certain leagues, it opens up an avenue for no relegation from the Premier League, and then the knock-on effect throughout. But, you know, there's no ideal scenario out of this. It's, you know, and perhaps if I was in Mark's situation, I'd be fighting the same way he is, which we can totally understand. And having spoken to a number of clubs in League One over the last week or so, I think everybody's very sympathetic to the Tranmere viewpoint. The points per game are weighted points per game. You know, listen, there's no ideal scenario. Mark did a paper which was, if you looked at the probability of, you know, the margin of error, shall we say, with points per game, you know, over 3 years. But then, if you know, then there was a university did a study over with far more data and proved that actually, you know, what Mark has put forward potentially wasn't accurate because they used far more data. Listen, it's a very difficult circumstance, and unfortunately, whether there's always going to be winners and losers in football, and sometimes there's the unlucky ones, and I think we all genuinely do feel for the Tranmere situation, because it's very difficult for them, you know, and it must be very frustrating for them too.
Absolutely. I mean, if the vote is that play does continue, How will that impact upon you? Because there's been talk about 20-match squads, 20-man squads. There's been talk about five substitutions. And then you've got the health issues of, you know, it's not good to have effectively a curtailed preseason or whatever we're going to call it, and to come back and to expect players to play 10 games in you know, 5 weeks. Is that realistic, or is it just simply a case of, as you said before, we're in uncharted territory and therefore we've just got to go with it?
Yeah, and I'm hoping that we don't have to play again. I think the general feel, as I say, the general feeling is that from clubs that we probably won't in League One. It's going to be difficult. I mean, there's talk of potentially the season restarting at the end of September. I think now that the Championship have declared that they're going to play again, you've then got to think that all the games would be in line with you know, them finishing this season, playoffs, etc. And then when do we restart again? Which maybe the end of September does make sense, but we've not had anything formal about when the season would restart. I think from a, you know, I speak to our manager, Sam Ricketts, a lot about, you know, how would you work pre-season? How do you deal with it? You know, the players are ready. They're talking about 3 weeks pre-season to get players up to speed to play the remaining games of this season, whether it's the Championship, Premiership or whatever. But, I mean, his opinion straight away is that 3 weeks isn't enough because they've had so many weeks off. Is it 10 weeks or whatever they've had off now? You know, for them to get up to speed, I mean, a normal pre-season is 6 to 8 weeks. And basically, they've been off for that length of time that you would probably merit 6 to 8 weeks. So it's going to be very, very difficult. As I say, there's no ideal scenario here. I think we all want football back, but we all want football back at a time when it's safe and it's the right time for everybody to come back. And then we've obviously got the crowds into stadium issue, which is another financial problem we've all got too.
Absolutely. That's absolutely brilliant. Well, thank you so much for giving us your time, Brian. I really appreciate it, and you know, good luck to Sam and the boys. And as a fan, you know, I want to be going to the grounds. And you know, if it's professional football without fans, it's not what everybody signed up for at the start of the season. So I can fully understand that from a financial perspective, it's putting a huge strain on you. And I just hope that you know, you come through this, as do all the other clubs, and we as fans have something to celebrate in a few months' time.
Well, I think if you look at the League One and League Two, League One and League Two as a proportion of our turnover, our club's turnover at our level, you know, the supporters coming into grounds is a far higher percentage as you go through the leagues, because obviously in the Championship they're getting 7.5 million central monies, and the Premiership are getting the 100+ million. So as a proportion of ticket income, it's a far smaller percentage, whereas in League One and League Two, you know, we all need that ticket income. We need the gates, and it's not just the ticket income, it's the catering monies, it's the hospitality monies, and it's all the ancillary monies and income streams that you then get from having football matches. So as you say, the sooner we can get crowds back in, the better. You know, there has been some studies showing that perhaps coming to football isn't actually put you at massive risk because it's an outdoor sport. So hopefully we can get through all this, get through the end of season scenario and get moving and get crowds, as you say, get crowds back as quickly as we possibly can, supporting our own teams.
Very much so. And I've not been to your new ground yet, so I've been to the old one on many an occasion. So it's on my tick list. So I am desperate for us all allowed to come back at some point soon.
Always welcome, Kieran.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brian. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Cheers, Kieran. Thanks.
So, Kieran, I think he made it fairly obvious he doesn't want to go back to playing football, does he?
Absolutely. And you can understand it. As he said, he called it financial suicide. And he also said that as an employer, he's concerned about his staff. He's got, you know, as he said, people in the back office. He's got an assistant manager who's 65. Why put their lives at risk when you're 16th in the table and got nothing to play for?
Yeah. I've always had, not soft spot, you know my views on having soft spots on other clubs, but Brian Moore, who was my football hero, along with George Best. Brian Moore was the commentator on the London Weekend Television football. At least once a season, they'd have 30-second highlights of Shrewsbury on for some reason. And Brian Moore would just crack up because they used to have a little man in a coracle. He used to go and fetch the ball from the river if it went out. And So I used to like stories because they made Brian Moore laugh when I was a kid. That's how simple things are when you're that young. And also that brilliant yellow and blue kit. It's always interesting to hear from people who run football clubs. So if anybody else out there wants to come along and talk to Kieran, I'm happy to sit out. I know my place. Please do get in touch with us. And if you have questions you want to put to us, our next pod will be on Monday, which is our questions pod. Email us on questions@priceoffootball.com. So, Kieran, you're off to Russia. Is that right?
Yes, a Russian university, and I'm appearing on a panel with a QC this afternoon as well.
Are you really? You're busier in lockdown than you ever were before this happened. Before this happened, you and I had time to go for a pint. Well, I had a pint. You had that bizarre lime soda water thing. I don't know. Your stomach must be lime soda corroded terribly, but you had time for a chat then, Kieran. You were a people person then, and now you're just, it's all media now, isn't it? You turned into Eamon Holmes.
Well, I'm looking forward to abusing referees and arguing about VAR in a couple of weeks more than anybody else in the country, I suspect, because I need a break.
Yes, it's true. So you can just get back to watching football. Yeah, we're all looking back forward to watching that. And so, of course, all us Palace fans are slightly worried about Kayla the Eagle, who's with the vet as we speak. So, again, this is not something I'd ever thought I'd say on a pod, but good wishes to an eagle, an actual eagle. And we'll see you all on Monday. Yes, Monday. What day is it? Lockdown. Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye, gang.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.